This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of Secrets of Once Upon a Time is brought to you by Bluehost. It's now easier and cheaper than ever before to start your own blog or website. For just $6.95 per month, you get unlimited hosting, one-click installation of WordPress, a .com domain name, and much more. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. And by the Amazon Store. Click on the link on our website before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show. Hello and welcome back to a new episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time, our weekly podcast dedicated to what I think is one of the coolest weekly TV series on ABC. And joining me today to discuss the episode about Red-Handed are the two sisters, Lisa and Shelley. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Is it still morning where you live or is it already afternoon?
It's noon.
Quarter after.
Okay, it's evening right over here in the Netherlands where I'm from. Unfortunately, we couldn't get Deborah online, although she might join us later on. She's currently at some kind of a yard sale, and although she has her laptop with her, she wasn't sure that she would find a moment to sneak out and join us. And David is on a business trip, so he can't join us today. But we've got plenty of stuff to talk about. Red-Handed. First reactions, what did you think of this episode?
I loved this episode.
I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Reminded me of why I like this show.
some amazing twists, especially of course the big reveal at the end.
They take our fairy tales that we love and they mix them up, and I love that. Because you don't always see it coming, and it's fun.
Absolutely. And they combined a couple of wolf-related fairy tales or myths into this episode, and we'll talk about that later on. But first of all, I've got some feedback from a few of our listeners, which is very cool. And it's now easier than ever to leave us voice feedback. You can just go to the main website of the StarQuest Production Network, and that's sqpn.com. And then on the right-hand side, there is a tab that you can click, and it will automate it. So you can just leave voice as long as your computer has a microphone and can record, it will record. And so go check it out. Here is our first reaction from the voice feedback.
Hello, this is Gisella from Yonkers calling to leave feedback for Secrets of Once Upon a Time. I'd actually emailed you some voice feedback several weeks ago, but since you're now asking for more voice feedback, I guess you never got it, especially since my wacky theory relates to something you mentioned in your most recent episode, that being character names. Okay, so here goes. This is a theory I've had for a long time. It regards the Queen's backstory. It was an idea that came to me when we first met the Queen's father, so it was quite some time ago. We know that her father is clearly not a king, so the queen became a queen by marrying a king, something that is confirmed when we learn that she is indeed Snow White's stepmother, as she is in the traditional fairy tale. And then I remembered Regina's last name in Storybrooke. It's Mills. And that's when it dawned on me. She's the miller's daughter from the Rumpelstiltskin story. If you remember in the original tale, the father brags that his daughter can spin straw into gold. Okay, so we've got a dad and a daughter. And the king, hearing of this, locks her up in a cell, and Rumpelstiltskin comes along and helps her spin the straw into gold. And finally, the king agrees to marry her, but if she can make gold one more time, and Rumpelstiltskin makes a deal with her for her firstborn child, to which she agrees. And then later on, after she's married the king and has a child, Rumpelstiltskin comes to claim the child, and she makes a deal about his name, and she guesses it, and so she gets to keep her baby. But given the twisting of the fairy tales that we've seen so far in the show, I think we're going to find out that in Once Upon a Time world, Rumpelstiltskin does end up taking her child, unlike in the original fairy tale. The queen mentioned on more than one occasion that she had already lost the thing she loved most, and at first I thought it might be a sweetheart or a husband, but no. Once I realized her last name was Mills and realized who I think she is, I thought, no, Rumpelstiltskin took her child. And that explains the animosity between these two characters and why this woman is mad at the world and wants everyone else to suffer as much as she has. Now, that doesn't mean the queen was totally good before this happened to her. I mean, she's such a devious and evil-hearted individual that I can't believe there wasn't some spark of evil in her prior to losing her child. But I think that that event was the catalyst for her evil side to completely take over. The only part I haven't figured out is why the queen blames Snow White for the loss of the thing she loves most. I mean, even Snow White herself tells...
Oh, and then it stops for some reason. I don't know why.
Oh my gosh, she's right.
I think that's
she's
it.
She's gotta be right.
That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, it makes perfect sense. And the twists and the fact that Mr. Gold is the one that brought Henry to her, Emma's son Henry, and the fact that
And that's
in
why
Hansel
she's...
and Gretel episode, she yes. wanted to know so desperately. She offered those children a home, and they said no. They had to go off with their
right,
father.
Right, right.
And
that's why she's
be.
So possessive of Henry as well. She feels that Emma might take him away. And you're like, why is she so attached to the boy? It doesn't make sense. But I always thought of the what is most precious, that would be her lover or her husband or whatever, or father.
Nope.
I never thought
nope.
of a child.
Every time they use the word precious, it refers to a child.
Of course.
Every time.
And then, let's see, how could Snow White tie into this?
What was it that she said? Snow couldn't keep a secret?
Of course. So perhaps they were trying to hide the child from Rumpelstiltskin, uh-huh. and then somehow she...
And Snow being a... I mean, she was a child or a young person, and she might have told somebody.
That must be it. I think that Gisella just hit the nail on the head.
And remember, we don't know why the king, you know, why she was, the revenge was in two parts. She was going to kill the king and she was so unhappy. And then she used the genie. And so yeah, I'd have to actually go back and watch that episode one more time with that thought in mind. But I bet she's right.
I think we're on to something here.
I mean, way to go, Gisella.
Fantastic. What a great voice feedback. Now, we also have some feedback from Jeffrey, whose last name is Miller. Suspicious. And let's see what Jeffrey has to say.
This is a voicemail for the SQPN Once Upon a Time podcast. This is Jeff Miller from Wisconsin. Really enjoy the show. I try to listen in every week. Had a couple things I wanted to point out. There was a discussion 2 weeks ago about the What Happened to Frederick podcast, and you were discussing the well and what could be at the bottom of the well, what could be, you know, underground. We've actually seen several things happen underground. When Henry and Jiminy Cricket were trapped underground, Henry grabbed a piece of glass. That was actually a piece of glass from Snow White's glass coffin. It
right.
actually had a piece of the entwined twigs still embedded in the glass. If you watch episode one, you'll actually see that the coffin has like twigs and wood draped around the glass coffin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Henry found. Also, when we see in Fairy Tale World where Regina, the evil queen, has her room with all the hearts in drawers, it's the exact same room she descends into at the bottom of the crypt. Thereby, we're kind of led to believe that it is the exact same room in Fairy Tale Land, and she goes down to get into that particular room. Also, another instance is when she goes to the asylum to visit Belle, she goes down a set of stairs in the regular hospital to visit Belle because she's in the asylum, supposedly in Fairy Tale Land, because that nurse she sees is a very odd nurse. So we've kind of led to believe that that also could be, you know, someone left over from Fairy Tale Land. So the implications we've been getting is that the city or town of Storybrooke is actually built over the remains of Fairy Tale Land, and that quite a bit of it actually still exists underneath. So who knows what could be at the bottom of the well, buried in the water. It could be almost anything. In fact, it could be kind of an interesting season finale to have someone throw a coin into the well and have the camera follow it down and there's, you know, Rumpelstiltskin's spindle or something that blatantly is left over from the remains of Fairy Tale Land.
By the way, I'm going to stop it here for just a second to apologize for the audio quality. It sounds as if Jeffrey is on the bottom of a well. But that's actually a side effect of the noise reduction that I had to apply because there was quite a bit of white noise. And so if you try to filter that out, it creates this weird echo. So Jeffrey is not recording this on the bottom of a well, or is he?
A couple other things I also wanted to point out. You discussed in this past episode, Sleepy. You were talking about Blue Fairy, whether she had legs or not. We actually see the Blue Fairy's legs in episode 1, in which the Blue Fairy makes an appearance when she talks about the enchanted tree trunk that can hold Emma and transport her to the world where they're going to be all transported to. You also discussed only seeing 7 dwarves. We've actually seen 8 of the familiar to us dwarves because there was Stealthy, who was actually killed.
Oh,
there was
true.
Also Bossy, mm-hmm. who we met in the episode Sleepy. There was also another dwarf that was present with Bossy when the eggs were starting to hatch. So we've seen quite a few dwarves.
Mm.
Again, you were correct that none of them are female. So again, their reproductive system does seem to be a little different, especially if something's laying eggs. But that's a really good question of what it is. Sleepy was an interesting episode. I didn't particularly care for the way it followed the storyline of Beauty and the Beast fairly closely as far as, you know, love's lost. You know, the individual fell in love with an individual that they probably could not spend the rest of their lives, or so they were convinced to believe, and then they had that love lost at the end of the episode, which is actually a different take because of the fact we're seeing a number of stories in fairy tale land that do not have happy endings. We're so used to seeing our happy endings, for the most part, in fairy tale land. And we're actually seeing that even in fairy tale land, we're not getting the happy endings we're expecting to, because that's what the majority of the books have, is the happy endings. So it's like, okay, how much does the real world, which has no happy endings, paralleling the fairy tale land, which, in point of fact, doesn't always have a happy ending in the end. So, again, Jeff Miller from Wisconsin saying hi. Enjoy the show. Looking forward to it every week. Thanks a lot.
These stories, the classics, it's a reason we all know them. They're a way for us to deal with our world. Well, if it doesn't always make sense, believing in even the possibility of a happy ending is a very powerful thing.
Well, let's talk about this episode called Red Handed. It was a Ruby / Little Red Riding Hood themed episode with lots of twists, lots of interesting food for thought, and, not for everyone, a happy ending. Actually, not a happy ending.
I like the way they had a real nice parallel between the fairy tale world and the real world in this episode.
Yes. Well, let's try to summarize what happens. I've got a very brief official summary, but perhaps we can expand upon that. Emma hires Ruby to help her at the sheriff's office and to give the woman a chance to determine what she's good at. Meanwhile, the sheriff questions David about his possible involvement in Catherine's disappearance, while in the fairy tale world, Red Riding Hood and her fellow villagers are trapped in their village by a bloodthirsty wolf. That's basically just setting the scene for the story.
Yeah.
Well, in the fairy tale,
The parallel, really, though, was that so they're after David. They're investigating David, who can't remember where he's been or what he's done, and they think he's the one responsible, or trying to prove that he's the one responsible, or they can't resolve the physical evidence that they have with what his statement is.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the fairy tale world, you've got the parallel because here we find out that every wolf time, which wasn't hard to figure out, that's every full moon, there's a big bad wolf that basically is terrorizing the villagers. And every time they go after to destroy the wolf, they get killed or get destroyed. Meanwhile, Granny's just saying, you know, let's just, everybody just stay tight for that time period and, you know, sacrifice a few sheep and that's good enough and we'll be okay. But everybody, again, they they think it's something that it turns out not to be.
Mm. So there are these question marks in both Storybrooke and in the fairy tale world. Mm-hmm. Although mm-hmm. it doesn't really get resolved.
And the big reveal at the end is, mm-hmm. on the one hand, I saw the big reveal at the end of the real world coming, but by golly, I didn't see that one coming in the fairy tale world. I was mad. My girls will tell you I was yelling at the TV. Oh my goodness!
You know, I was kind of expecting a certain twist, and so halfway through the episode, I thought I figured it out. First, I was like, "Well, Peter is going to be the wolf. That's going to be the twist." And then I was like, "No, that's too obvious." Especially, you know, the moment that they go outside and she's going to chain him to a tree. I was like, "There's no way in the world that he's going to be the wolf. This is a bad idea." And then I was like, "Wait a minute! It's this nasty guy who is the leader of the hunting party." I was like, we've seen him in the beginning.
That's what I was thinking. And I kept thinking, is that Dr. Whale? Is that Dr. Whale?
No,
he's a ledge.
I thought it
She's
was
already
Granny.
Called him a ledge.
Is that Will?
You thought it was Granny?
I thought it was Granny. Well, especially that she saw the wolf as a child. It mm-hmm. got her on the arm. And I just assumed once they figured out it was a human, I thought, it's going to be Granny. It's going to be Granny.
See, that was the logical thought. I should have figured that.
So. Well, you were at least half right. I didn't
even
see that
coming. She was married to the wolf. It was Ruby's grandfather.
I was so glad, though, that I didn't see it coming because it made it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you don't want it to be predictable. You don't want to be able to see it. I love that they found a twist that we all went, oh, really?
And then when you go back, you're like, how didn't I see this coming?
Right.
It's so
That's
obvious.
It. Exactly
I mean, even the title of the episode, Red Handed. I mean, they catch her red-handed.
Right. Well, that's what's so that's when you'd have to give props to the writers because they led you down a path and then threw it on you and you didn't see it. I mean, they gave you all these references to Peter and the Wolf and the Big Bad Wolf and, you know, would you say Three Little Pigs?
Yes, yes. There were some great, this was another great mashup of a few stories. And the Three Pigs story was referenced several times with Peter, of course. And then I was like, Peter, of course, Peter and the Wolf. And just rereading the story of Peter and the Wolf, I actually noticed that they took the protective attitude of Granny. They took that straight from Peter and the Wolf. In the original story, it's I think it's Peter's father who doesn't want Peter to go outside because he's afraid that, there's this wolf out there. And mm-hmm. I love that they kind of put that or pasted that into the story of Little Red Riding Hood. And I was constantly wondering, you know, what's the deal with Granny? I mean, why was she spared? And I just didn't see it coming. And another, go ahead.
I like the way she said she was turned. So she herself has been a wolf, but it faded away.
Yes.
For whatever reason, it faded away with time. Maybe because she was turned and not born with it. But she said Red's mother had it. She was 13 when it started, and she was a wolf. And it's a terrible burden. The grandfather was the first wolf. But then how awesome was it that they explained the Red Riding Hood?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And again, Lisa, with your theory that everybody's looking for a magical answer to their problems, mm-hmm. to their burdens— Dadgummit, she didn't state it clearly, but you know she went to Mr. Gold.
Right. She said she got it from a wizard.
You think?
She said she got it from a wizard. And yes. I thought, you know, when has there ever been magic? You know, someone goes to get magic on this show that hasn't been from Rumpelstiltskin.
I didn't think of that. Of course, it must have been him. So?
Yeah, so it was kind of odd he was missing. But at the same time, we've had so much of him being the bad guy in fairy tale world. I liked the idea that he wasn't the bad guy here. You know, it wasn't about him for a change. It was about another character and their issue. Yeah. So that was kind of...
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and you know what? There was this big question I got to when we found out that Red's the wolf. And then parallel, you know, Ruby is working with Emma and she's, you know, going and tracking down David. And she just sort of hears it. And then they have Granny, she's tracking her by smell in the fairy tale world. And they're going back and forth. And I thought, you know what? I wonder what Ruby's relationship was with Graham. Did they have some kind of a simpatico relationship because Graham had been raised by wolves?
I don't remember them interacting much.
Well,
I'm now got to go back and watch the early episodes with him.
And Graham is kind of akin to Ruby in the way that he behaves in the forest. I mean, he seems to know his way and has this instinct. And there's definitely something. I mean, I remember there are early speculations that he would be the wolf.
Mm-hmm.
And remember what he would see. What does he want in return for killing Snow White? He wants there to be a ban on killing wolves.
Oh, and of course, we still don't know who his fairy tale character is, or do we? No.
He was the huntsman.
Oh, the huntsman,
Graham
of course.
Was the huntsman.
Yes. Sorry, I'm confused.
And, right. And he wanted a moratorium on killing wolves. So did he know that there were these, I'll use the word werewolves, but did he know that there were these humans turned wolves?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I didn't think about that because he was at the same time as all of this was going on. Because when he let Snow go, we see her in this episode on the run and hiding out with Ruby or Red. So, you know, they did coexist at the same time in fairy tale world at the same time. But no,
yeah, and it must have been really close together too, because she wasn't in her green survival gear yet, and she was definitely came across as a lost, weepy kind of fearful girl.
Yes, definitely. Yes,
she wasn't the strongest Snow yet that we saw in the first early episodes.
But here's something my kids reminded me of and that I should have picked up on, and I feel bad that I didn't. Do you remember the episode with Cinderella and Ashley is running away?
Yeah.
And Emma notices that Ruby has got her little wolf figurine. Wow. From her car.
Of course. Yes. Yeah.
I'd forgotten about that, the little crystal wolf thing hanging from the rearview mm-hmm. mirror.
So they've been setting this up for episodes ago. And
from the beginning.
We didn't notice it.
That is so fun. Gosh. I read an article about from the actress who plays Ruby or Red. And how early did she know this was going to happen? Did they tell her? And mm-hmm. she said they did. They told her a little earlier in the season that they were going to do this with her character.
Amazing.
So that's
amazing.
That's fun. I loved seeing her out of the diner, mm-hmm. you know, and having a point and a plot.
Yeah, she was only serving food. And then Granny is so sharp when she gets back to Granny to say, "Well, I've got a job now." And it's like, "Well, what's the difference with what you already did? You're just fetching food for people." I thought it was brilliant.
Well, and keep in mind the original story, they referenced the little basket. You carry things in a little basket. But what was she taking to Granny's?
I don't know.
The food? She was taking food. She was taking a basket of food to Granny's.
Oh, sure.
On the story.
Well, and then you've got the basket with the chickens as well. It's the same small basket that she's carrying.
Oh, yeah. We did see Ruby progress from kind of spoiled – I want to say teenager or young adult, you know, with the punk hair mm-hmm. and the outfit and everything. And then she left, you know, she left Granny's, you know, got a job, you know, and realized the big bad world wasn't something she really wanted to be part of, you know, with Emma, you know, finding the heart in the ground and, you know, mm-hmm. all of that. And then she goes back to Granny's. But when she comes back, if you notice, she wasn't wearing all of the punked out makeup and the, you know, she was wearing like jeans and mm-hmm. I think it was a red shirt, of course. But, you know, she looked a little more normal than she had. And you kind of wonder if, you know, it was kind of the start for her development too, because she's been stuck as this character for so long in Storybrooke. Well, now all of a sudden she gets to kind of, you know, find herself.
And could it be that that is kind of symbolizing perhaps that the wolf in her is fading away? Kind of this rough, more, I don't know, primitive behavior is starting to mature. And I think there was a very interesting thing going on with the colors, and something actually that I wondered about her hair since the beginning of the show is like, why does she have these red strands? Other than, of course, to reference the red from Little Red Riding Hood. And then I was looking at the scene where she is talking with Granny, and there are two coats in the background. I posted a photo on our blog at onceuponatime.sqpn.com, and I noticed that there are two coats in the background, and it must have been on purpose. One is gray and the other one is her own red coat. And it's almost like the dual nature in her. And then she's wearing this shirt, and there too, it's gray and red. So it's like the gray symbolizing the wolf and then the red. But her hair as you mentioned, is normal. And she yeah, I don't know. Perhaps she is. It's fading away, just like it did with Granny.
I saw her change coming a little bit differently. I saw it as an acceptance of who you are. She's wild in the beginning. She dreams of escape. She dreams of doing more, being more, seeing the world, not becoming like Granny. And then in the fairy tale world, she says about the wolf, she says, I can't let it keep me trapped forever. She wants to live. She wants to go out and live in the world. So she feels like the wolf is keeping her trapped. It's keeping her from love. And what it is, though, is she just doesn't know her true self. So, and then to parallel that, David in the real world is walking around. He doesn't know himself. He is trapped. He is kept from love. And so they've kind of kept the same theme that they've had throughout the whole episode, that these people are trapped in the curse. But I thought more of a coming to understand who you really are, what your hidden talents are. They talked about talents. Emma has a talent for knowing when people are lying or telling the truth. And Emma helps Ruby, and I keep messing the names up. Yes, Ruby, find out what she's good at. Find her talent. Find out who she is. And what she finds terrifies her. I don't know what I am. I'm scared out of my mind. She doesn't know how she's tracking this heart that she uncovers in the woods. Granny tells her when she comes to pick up the lunch, I hope you are finding what you're looking for. But when she comes back and she's in that whole different look, she accepts that she was afraid of responsibility. And that she tells Granny, I found someone in myself that was more than what I expected.
Right.
So it's a growing up. I mean, you could say it's a growing up, that learning to know who you are, figuring out your true self.
Speaking of true
self. Anyway, that's how I saw it.
I was looking at the meaning of the name that we know. Of course, Ruby refers to the color red. But according to some of the feedback that I read online, we also hear that her real name is Eliza. Is that correct? I totally missed that. And so I was looking for the meaning of the name Eliza, and then I went to the Are You Pregnant website, Baby Names World, and it started to play this stupid video. That's why it wasn't a jingle. It's just one of these autoplay websites. But anyway.
Granny is the Widow Lucas, and I didn't have time to look up the names, but Granny's name was Widow Lucas in the episode.
Was it?
Is that the... Yeah. The last name?
In the fairy tale world. In the fairy tale world, when they are having the big meeting and she finally tells her story, she calls herself the Widow Lucas. And she tells about how, what was it, almost 60 years ago, which is a score is 20 years. So nearly 60 years ago, she was a girl.
Mm-hmm.
And she had those 6 older brothers who were veterans of the Second Ogre War. And then her father. And so 7 men, the wolf killed 7 men. There's your number 7 again popped in. Mm-hmm. And she tumbled from the roof, but it marked her. So what, it fell in love with her? It noticed her because he came back as a man and married her.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about that.
So Lucas is for us, of course, Luke. Does it mean light? I think it means light in Greek. Don't really see any additional meaning to that or clue. Eliza is from Hebrew. It means my God is a vow. Not really seeing the connection to this story either.
But since you said my God, did you notice they say my gods all the time?
Yes,
plural.
Yeah.
I noticed
Star Galactica. They did it 4 times in that episode.
True. The fairy tale world seems to have how do you call that? Like a pluralistic, multiple gods. I'm sure that there's a nice theological term for that.
The first time I'd ever heard it was in this episode, but it did stand out to me. And I thought, have they established this, or is this
not yet?
I thought that was kind of strange. It made me think of Battlestar Galactica. Yes,
but it kind of fits the mythological nature of the fairy tale world.
Right.
Well, and didn't one of the writers write for Battlestar?
Yes. Could be.
We did find that Battlestar and Caprica.
And in the early episodes, didn't we notice there was a circle? I know there was the table, the round table, but wasn't there also a circle on the floor? And it looked like, Father, you said it had different symbols around.
Yes.
12, 13 symbols around.
Although I think I was wondering if that could refer to the various kingdoms in the country, but then again, that doesn't make sense because it was in the castle of one of those kings. So I'm not sure if that has a religious meaning.
And the map with the Bell episode, I think there were 7 castles on the map.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, we'll have to go back to that episode and research that a little bit more. But yeah, there were definitely some animal symbols. I thought it was more kind of a representation of the famous, you know, circle of the Knights of the Round Table. And whether or not they will use that, perhaps in a future season, or I don't know. I've not seen any connection yet.
I was interested, since we talked about, since Emma came along, and then August, is that his name, August Booth, the writer?
Mm-hmm.
Is that right? He's the one that kind of put the notion in her head, I need to go see the world. I need to go, you know, what was it? Was it not lemmings? It was...
Lemur.
Yeah. Lemurs, that's what it was. Mm-hmm. Which is a funny thing to talk about. But he started talking about lemurs and she needed to see the world and she got out. And so I wonder, now we see him influencing things rather than just Emma.
True.
And of course, Emma stops her before she tries to leave town and something bad happens to her, which I thought that was nice. But as the curse starts to break or evolve or weaken or, you know, whatever our theory is about that, what does that mean about Ruby with the wolf?
Well, hang on, you probably didn't see this because you watched it online, but mm-hmm. when they open the show, you know, they kind of do it's kind of like a last time on, but it's a new summary, and they're summarizing the show and as a whole. This one had a new summary, and they're talking about, you know, they're all trapped in the fairy tale world, and they show Mr. Gold, and they show, who knows, Mr. Gold, and they show the evil queen. But when they say the words, and who can break the spell, mm-hmm. it starts with Emma, and then they go to Gus. Or August.
Really?
They go to him.
Oh, true. Yeah, and they show the typewriter as well in that preview.
That's right. So I think you're onto something there, Elise, because the who can break the spell, and they show both of those two characters.
Well, and perhaps, and we've already talked about this before, perhaps the two are actually related in some way. He could be the boy that found Emma, and so they might have a common past as well, and therefore perhaps a common mission here in the world of Storybrooke.
Do you think he's older than Emma?
Yeah, a little bit.
Who knows? Say five or so years?
It's hard to tell. He's got a motorbike, so he could already be at the stage of the midlife crisis.
Could he be the child that Regina had to give away? If Gisella's theory is correct and she's the Miller's daughter and she married the king and there was a child and Rumpelstiltskin took it, could he be the child?
Could be.
And he'd been banished or he'd been sent out into this world or maybe he...
But then
it could be because the little boy that found Emma was, what, 7? So that's 7 years, which we don't know how old, you know, Snow White was if all that happened, and then what age all the rest, you know. So, I mean, 7 to 10 years could be.
But you're right, a little boy, what if it was August that found Emma?
Because it is kind of random, the little, you know.
And then August would be revealed to be the son of Regina. Could be. I wonder how they're going to explain this, though. But sure, why not?
Wouldn't you like to see their design board room?
Yes.
Sitting in one of their spinning meetings where they spin all these stories.
I remember
one heck of a whiteboard on the wall, you know.
I remember for the last few episodes of Lost, they did an interview with the two writers, and they took a photo in one of these magazines, and it showed their room, their writer's room, and it had this big, big whiteboard with basically the main threads of the seasons. I don't know how many seasons there were, 5 or 6, all spun out, and then, you know, just so showing us that they really knew where they wanted to take the story and what the big points that they had to, the marks that they had to hit were. And then, you know, sometimes it would create these filler episodes, but I'm pretty sure that they conceived of Once Upon a Time in the same way, and that they took a lot of cues from that writing process.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they said they thought of it or created the idea of it many years before they actually started working on it, while they were working on Lost. And so you wonder how developed the ideas of what they want to do, where they want to take it, how developed it was before they even started, you know, really fleshing out the first season. So I wouldn't be surprised if they have a really good story arc
Oh, sure.
already planned for
yeah.
this.
I mean, they probably kind of sense that this series could become a new success and a hit, and so you always want to plan for several seasons. But then again, you don't want to kind of fill in everything because you can't be canceled, as we've seen with so many series. I mean, this year is another record-breaking year for canceled series. And Once Upon a Time is one of the few shows that actually survived the first season and is already a guaranteed renewal for next year.
I think I'd like it better if I knew for a fact that they were only going to do 2 or 3 seasons. So we know there's definitely going to be a beginning, a middle, and a yes. final ending, you know, where it tells the story and it all gets wrapped up and resolved. And they've planned it that way. And so it has a nice progression, rather than waiting until they get the word, you know, we've just kind of petered out and we're just, you know, going to wrap it all up really, really fast. And that's how I felt Battlestar Galactica ended, just in a big rushed mess. And I didn't watch Lost, but that's what I heard people say about Lost. And I think I'd feel better if I knew for a fact they're like, okay, we're getting 3 episodes. We've got it sketched out from day one to day final. And here we're going to tell this fantastic, wonderful story.
Well, I think that's a discussion fans have been having for a long, long time about their favorite shows.
in both cases, both for Lost and for what's the other one that we were talking about? Well, anyway, for Lost and for some other show, for Battlestar Galactica, I'm scatterbrained today. They actually knew when they had to end the series, and in both cases the writer said that once they knew what the end date was going to be, their writing improved considerably because they had a goal, they knew how to get there. And for Lost, the writers have even said that they had like a shortcut way to wrap up a season. If they would get canceled during a year, they knew exactly how many episodes they needed to get to the end. And of course they would skip over a lot of the plot lines that they wanted to resolve, so they couldn't explain everything, but they would have a satisfactory ending. And I hope that for Once Upon a Time they have that as well.
Mm-hmm. And Mike in the chat room is saying that Lost wasn't actually rushed, that they did know seasons mm-hmm. in advance that it was ending.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. I think the same is
true.
Well,
one thing we haven't talked about is the heart.
Yes. And I've got some more details. Hold on. I'm going to play a jingle here.
Every story needs a memorable detail.
Well, the memorable detail was definitely memorable this time, and it wasn't really a detail. It was a heart, a real human heart in a box.
Oh, my goodness.
That was scary.
When she pulled that box and you were like, yeah!
The reaction when Ruby dug it, and you're like, what is it? What is it? You know, and then your heart, and you're like, oh my gosh. Regina has a whole bunch of those. Whose could it be?
Yes.
But is it Catherine's?
I don't think so.
There was some feedback that somebody said maybe it's Regina's. Did she pull her own heart out? That seems kind of...
Let me read a few of the reactions on the website and on Twitter, because I actually asked the question, whose heart is this really? They want us to believe that it's Catherine's, because at least the people in Storybrooke think that it's probably right. Catherine's, because, you know, the fingerprints that are in there. By the way, also very strange. Why would that be Mary Margaret's fingerprints in the box?
Right. Oh, and that's the one I saw coming. You knew the minute. Yeah.
Well, I didn't see it coming.
Mary Margaret was going to be arrested. So we knew it's coming back to her.
I didn't know that.
Someone in my family said she touched the box in Fairy Tale World.
Sure. Yeah, but perhaps this has to do with next week's episode,
right?
Somehow, but so that there's something, I don't know, that she did in the Fairy Tale World that hasn't been revealed yet. But I personally don't think it's Margaret's heart. I think or Catherine's heart. I think Catherine is definitely alive and probably in the same psych ward as Belle. So. Let's see. I asked the question, whose heart is this? On the comments writes, it could be Regina's, and it was done back in Fairy Tale Land, so she can't love and be hurt again or have compassion for anyone else. After all, she killed her father, for goodness sake. Or it could be David's heart, so Regina could control him, something done before the curse, which would explain his blackouts. And then Giles or Jill's responds, "I doubt that it's David's heart, as he does feel and can connect with Mary Margaret. Remember, the Huntsman said he could not feel or connect with anyone. I also doubt it's Catherine's or Abigail's heart, since she also has feelings. I like your theory that it's Regina's, or it could be another female victim that we have yet to meet, or maybe it could be Belle's heart." Not sure. Jossie definitely thinks it's Regina's heart, and it has Snow or Mary Margaret's fingerprints, because in the past Regina kept saying that Snow took something from her, the only thing she loved the most. Could it be the only thing she loved most, her heart? Nah, don't think so.
But it could be like, forgot the girl's name already. If it was a child that was taken for her, maybe she took, I hate to say that, but her own heart, because that's how she controlled the Huntsman and he couldn't feel. And maybe somehow own heart is in a box, so she couldn't feel either.
I kind of like the idea, though, that maybe I don't know how Regina would have taken out her own heart, but the idea that she put hers away, she locked it away so that she can't. And that allows her to manipulate the genie, and that allows her to manipulate and kill her own father without even looking too pained about it. I don't know. That seems to work for me, too.
Could it be the Evil Queen's father's heart? That's what Raven Brand says on Twitter. Seems a bit far-fetched.
No. She had to use the heart, the father's heart, to enact the curse.
Spell, yeah. Remember, she had to take it out.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Well, and if it's Regina's own in the box and it has Mary Margaret's fingerprints on it, it kind of makes sense in a creepy way, since she, you know, says Mary Margaret took away, you know, her happiness and what she loved the most. So, you know, that it would have Mary Margaret's fingerprints.
At first, I really thought that the theory that it was David. David's heart made sense to me, because I still don't understand David's behavior in the forest. It's like, why does he have these blackouts?
David's still trapped between the two worlds. Remember when he first woke up from the coma, and Henry explained to Emma that that's just because he doesn't remember who he is. He doesn't know. He still has that amnesia because he was already, you know, injured and unconscious when the curse took effect. So,
you know, we do forget that he just woke up from amnesia and coma and all of that. So it probably wouldn't be that weird for him to, I don't know.
Well, that's what Dr. Whale says, actually, in the hospital. He's like, well, this is just part of the, you know, the aftermath of the coma. So there's a perfectly, you know, there's a medical explanation to this. It's not that he's being controlled or anything. I actually thought it was interesting that he said to Mary Margaret, you know, I can't find it. So he's searching, and you think he's searching for Catherine, but I think he's searching for himself. He's searching for you know, who am I, at least metaphorically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the parallel. He's walking around. He doesn't know who he is.
Yeah,
he's
just
trapped.
like Little Red Riding Hood in the fairy tale world. Mm-hmm. Although he doesn't really find himself at the end of the story. That's a sad thing.
Oh. Okay, did anyone have a theory about how the heart got in the woods and the ground? Because I have one.
Well.
Mr. Gold.
I was like,
shovel.
There was this guy with the shovel.
Doing a little gardening. He's looking for it, or he's
I don't
one
know.
One of two things, either looking for it or he planted it
I think he's trying to dig it up. I think he's looking for it because the heart, having the heart means that you can control someone, right?
Mm-hmm. That's what we
and
think.
He wants to control Regina. So it could be Regina's heart.
It could be Regina's heart.
Well, you know, that'd be interesting. Here we know Rumpelstiltskin's dagger is out there somewhere. And now with Regina's heart, who controls the other person first?
Oh, interesting. Interesting. Fantastic.
You didn't like it, Lise.
No, I do. I just keep forgetting about that.
Oh.
Which, you know, these are questions they will never tell us. Well, I shouldn't say never. They won't tell us for a very long time.
They'll drag it out. Hey, did you catch when she met Snow White, and Snow was trying to call herself Frosty?
Yes.
And then she's like, but I need something to call you. Margaret.
Yeah.
No, Mary.
Yeah. Just use Mary.
Frosty. And,
yeah, Frosty was great.
When they went out together, how visually beautiful was that? When they're looking for the wolf and they're walking around in all the snow, and there's Snow White and Ruby Red. It was just very beautiful.
I was wondering if it was real snow because it looked so – I mean the entire area looks very frosty in a way. Mm-hmm. I was like –
Well, and their noses were red, like they were really cold.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So maybe they film in Vancouver. They have snow.
It's probably real snow.
And they used the colors again, like Father was talking about with the two mm-hmm. – at the end with the two jackets, the gray and the black, gray and the red.
Gray and the red.
But Mary Margaret, this whole episode, she's not wearing any color. Everything she wears is white or an off-white or slightly gray tinge to it. And I wasn't able to do the podcast for the Dreamy episode, but she was in white in that episode too, in the real world, except for all but the last scene. Does anybody remember what color Mary Margaret's wearing in the last scene with David in the animal shelter?
No.
Is it blue?
David's wearing blue. Everything's gray blue except for Mary Margaret. Red? She's in pink.
Oh.
She's in pink. And then in the preview for the next, in the preview for the next one, she is in a different colored pink. So.
Interesting.
She's not red, but she's in pink.
So we didn't see Mr. Gold at all. We didn't really see Regina.
No.
I don't think we saw Regina at all. We saw Henry.
There's a very brief moment with Regina.
She came in and she said, I think you've covered this room.
Yeah.
Oh, right, right. And we saw
August, of course.
For about 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah, just very briefly. But I guess that has to do also with child actors, and they have to go to school, and they can, you know, they can't work full time on a show like this. I was wondering, you start looking for clues even if there aren't any clues, but I just want to mention a few things just in case I missed something. I mean, the fact that we see August eating pie, is that apple pie? Has that a meaning,
pumpkin
or is it just pie? Or is it pumpkin pie?
Oh, I forgot about that.
He's eating pie. Anyway, I thought it was weird. I was like, why is he eating pie? And there was, of course, the whole symbolism for some of these, for the wolf story. I mean, they drew from the werewolf mythology, but also I think from the vampire mythology with the silver tip or the arrow. But I was wondering, is that true for werewolves too? I'm not very up to date on all the current hype around vampires.
I am not a follower of all that either.
The glitter skin and stuff. So do they use silver tipped arrows for wolves as well, or is it just for vampires?
We're getting on the chat room says werewolves are part of the vampire stories. Yes.
Yeah.
Silver kills a werewolf.
Okay. Well, that's good. But the whole fact that you can become a werewolf by being bitten, is that part of the werewolf legend, or is that part of the vampire legend, or both? I don't know.
I have to wait for chat room to tell us. I don't know either. Oh, yes, both.
Okay. Oh, interesting. There was Pongo. We heard at least a mention of Pongo on the phone, keeping our hopes alive that we might see Cruella de Vil when we talked about her last week. It's like, how cool would it be if somehow Regina turns out to be Cruella de Vil as well, and that they somehow kind of combine those stories.
Well, they've had Beauty and the Beast, so you never know.
And you know, it was very interesting that we hear about Pongo, because there's a complaint about Pongo. Now, I don't know if you noticed, but the very first minute of the show, when we see Granny's diner, you hear a wolf in the background. Or I thought it was a wolf.
I saw
this howling.
It was a wolf.
Well, and then I'm thinking the complaint about Pongo. There was also about the dog is making noise. And I think that, well, that's probably the howling that we heard at the start of the episode. It's probably Pongo in the backyard.
I agree with you, except I watch TV with the closed caption on, which drives Lisa absolutely up a wall. And it actually said, wolf howls.
Okay. Well, perhaps Pongo sounds like a wolf. I don't know.
That is funny. Oh, I do hate that.
Well, if a wolf was howling, though, wouldn't that get all the dogs all barking and kind of up?
Well, we've seen a wolf in the show before.
True. Yes.
That's right.
You're right.
Grandma's dead doesn't mean that wolf isn't still out there.
Well, wait.
Twice we've seen a wolf.
Oh, I just thought of something.
Yeah.
Okay. So what if Red or Ruby is the wolf from the Huntsman stuff, you know?
She's not big enough. I mean,
how do you know? Was that?
Well, they were tracking that wolf, and it had like 8-inch paws, and the stride was like 20 feet. When you see Graham with the wolves are normal size. That's the only thing. But I definitely think there's going to be a connection between the Huntsman.
Think about it. We've seen a wolf in Storybrooke.
Yes.
Remember?
It actually makes Emma has to break for the wolf, right? When she
right.
Are you thinking that that's Ruby?
Well, I don't know. I just thought of it. And Graham saw one, remember, across the street? Remember he saw the wolf
in his
last
Ruby.
Episode, too?
But if it's Ruby, how is that possible? I mean, shouldn't she be under spell, unable to do this?
I don't know. We've got Gold and, well, Regina's still walking around, you know, doing things. I don't know. We don't know what it controls. Everybody seems to have a touch of their Storybrooke character their fairy tale character in them. You know, like Archie still has the conscience part of Jiminy Cricket. You know, they all seem to retain just a little bit. And maybe there is something strange that Ruby can still change. I don't know.
Inge in the chat room dug up some information about the werewolves. They were said in European folklore to bear telltale physical traits, even in their human form. These included the meeting of both eyebrows at the bridge of the nose, curved fingernails, low-set ears, and a swinging stride. Doesn't really apply to Ruby. In Italy, France, and Germany, it was said that a man or woman could turn into a werewolf if he or she on a certain Wednesday or Friday slept outside on a summer night with the full moon shining directly on his face. This is from Wikipedia.
Either way, I thought they did a fantastic job with the episode and the werewolf tie-in. And of course, again, did you think Harry Potter, the third book with Harry Potter? The werewolf.
Oh, of course, yes. Lupin, or what's
Lupin.
His name? Lupin turning into a werewolf.
Yeah.
Yeah, we never saw Peter turning into we never see the transition. They do the convenient, let's save some money on the special effects by just using the red hood and throw it over the wolf. More information here in the chat room. Most modern fiction describes werewolves as vulnerable to silver weapons and highly resistant to other injuries. This feature does not appear in stories about werewolves before the 19th century. The claim that the Beast of Gévaudan, an 18th century wolf or wolf-like creature, was shot by a silver bullet appears to have been introduced by novelists retelling the story from 1935 onwards and not in earlier versions. Okay, very interesting. There was a very funny little transition. We see Granny with the silver-tipped arrow, and then we switch to Storybrooke, and we're in the store, and she is actually pinning a receipt on a silver pin. You know, she takes like a note, and she does like the scratch. It's like, wow, that's the arrow, of course. I love these little hidden gems in there, too.
Yeah.
And then I also thought that what Ruby says to Granny, you know, I don't want to turn into you, kind of when once you know the backstory, it has a double meaning, of course. Now, let's speculate about Mary Margaret and her fingerprints in the box. How did that happen? I mean, how could that have happened?
Well, Snow would have the same fingerprints as Mary Margaret.
Absolutely. That's what I was thinking. It must have happened in the story, fairy tale world. But how?
Yeah. I have a feeling next week is called Heart of Darkness that we're going to explore this.
I think so.
If you look at who's credited for being there, it's the dwarves are back and Snow and the queen. And I have a feeling this is going to be kind of either at least answer a lot of these questions or give us more background on how that heart got in the box.
Yeah.
I don't know. I disagree. I'm going to go on the record and say that I think if the heart is Regina's and the heart is in the box, that it's going to be before that particular time in the timeline. But the evidence is going to stack up against Mary Margaret, and we know that Regina is manipulating the evidence, and she's the reason she put that phone record on there, and that's why Emma's so confused. She can't reconcile the fact that she's got proof that David talked to Catherine, but she's got David saying he didn't. And she doesn't think he's lying, which they tried to explain with the
blackout.
The blackout, thank you. But you know Regina's pulling it.
Look who's joining us. Deborah.
Hi, Deborah.
How are you?
We're good.
It's better late than never, right?
Absolutely.
It's perfect timing because I'm about to have to bow out. I'm at the job and it's my lunch hour's up. And so That's great that you're coming on. And I can't wait to hear your ideas with the Disney connections here.
Oh, it's funny because I don't even know how long you've been recording because I just walked in the door. But there's not a lot, really. not anything obvious, I'll have to say.
Mm-hmm.
I think I left some notes on SQPN about some of the connections with the wolf stories. You know, Peter and the Wolf and the Three Pigs were both Disney shorts, animated shorts.
Oh,
one of
really?
Them an Oscar winner.
Oh, yeah. I knew the Three Little Pigs. I didn't know about Peter and the Wolf.
Yeah. Narrated by Sterling Holloway, who is a very famous voice actor for Disney.
And did they use the original Prokofiev music?
Yes, they did. And they explained it like, Peter's represented by the strings. And, you know, so they explained it before they got into the story. So
how is the story of Peter and the Wolf? How does it end? Does he kill the wolf? Or I don't remember.
I don't think so. I think that even in the original Peter and the Wolf, I don't think the wolf, he actually gets away and he eats the duck, which from what I understand.
But you still hear the duck quacking.
Yes, from
in
inside the wolf. Yes.
Yeah.
But the Disney version, I think the duck survives, so.
Yeah. I know. I loved it when they said his name was Peter. I just, you saw like the grin. I just love that. I love that they brought in these other stories and mixed it all up.
Yeah.
But poor guy. I mean, there was people speculating online afterwards whether or not he was, was he really dead?
That's what I thought. I was
real world.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, someone put. I think it was. It was on ours, or I saw it online somewhere, that no, the writer said he's really eaten.
When I saw what Father had written on the SQPN website, I was laughing because I'm like, no, dude, he's dead.
Yeah.
You're so optimistic, but he's dead.
Well, no, I was. I'm not watching this with closed captions, so sometimes I don't really understand the dialogue. I thought it's someone said he got away, and I was like, wow, there's only his, I thought it was a hand or a foot or something lying on the ground there. It's like, did he cut off his own foot to escape, and then will he come back? And then that was actually, I had a little exchange with Tammy, who wrote in the comments, the writer said that Red ate him up except for one foot. And then I was like, really? Do you have a place where I can find that? Because I didn't see any interviews. And then Tammy said, I just Twittered the writer, Jane E., and asked her if Red killed Peter. And her reply was, she ate him up all but one foot. And that scarred some people for life. Riddle Raven.
I had someone ask me after this episode if my kids were watching. If my kids, they haven't really gotten into it. They don't really care. But I know Shelley's girls watch with her, and they were just, I think it scared them a little. I mean, they enjoyed it, but I think it kept them on the edge of their seat.
Yeah.
I don't know if you'd talked about that yet or not, but my favorite aspect of this whole episode was the horror story aspect of it. I'm like, that's excellent, because it beckons back to those wonderful werewolf movies that we all loved as children and scared the, the pants mm-hmm. off of us. So that's what I loved about this episode.
Yeah. Well, and you can tell that this was that same writer who likes to write the strong female characters, because what did Red Riding Hood do? Let's go get it ourselves.
Yes.
everyone else is locked up, or these big hunting parties are all getting slaughtered, and she's looking at Snow going,
and even Granny is sitting there like a female Rambo with her bow and arrow, and she's like, I'm going to kill this animal. Absolutely amazing. So I have to ask you, Deborah, we already discussed this at length, but whose heart do you think is in the box?
Oh, gosh. And I hate to say and sound morbid, but I think it's Catherine's. I really do.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
But don't they want us to believe that?
I know. Well, that's why it's so obvious. That's why it's like, well, I hate to say it, but, you know.
But then let me ask you another question. How is it possible that Mary Margaret's fingerprints are in the box?
That maybe it's something from fairy tale world that was, you know, something in the castle that belonged to Mary Margaret in, you know, before she was, you know, when she was.
I think our connection just broke for some reason. And that could be. Are you still there, Deborah?
I'm here.
Okay.
No. It was Lisa.
Lisa's there. Yeah, I think that Deborah's connection got severed, but she might be on a wireless connection. But, Catherine's heart. I
That is interesting.
I would be a bit disappointed, unless they have a very good explanation for it. But I was like,
I did read something that the actress that plays Catherine is now on another show.
Oh.
So I don't know if
That could indicate that it might be her heart.
She might be done. I don't know.
Oh, boy. Mike has an amazing quote in the chat room, and I want to read it here because it's so good. As Snow White sings...
Okay, sorry.
No problem. Wow. Here, yeah, the connection was getting severed for some reason. Mike writes, Snow White sings, "Someday my prince will come." Like Prince in P-R-I-N-T-S. Brilliant. Oh, man. Hey, let's wrap up this show with a short, brief, spoilerish preview of episode 16 called Heart of Darkness. Again, Heart and Darkness. Well, we get the heart. We need
some heart in the box.
And then darkness, is that Snow White? It's like the opposite of white is, you know, black, darkness. Let's listen.
I'm innocent. I didn't kill her.
All new next Sunday.
The evidence is piling up by the hour.
She is a woman who's had her heart broken. That can make you do unspeakable things.
What could turn someone white as snow?
I want your help to kill the queen.
Dark as night.
You can't kill her.
Watch me.
ABC's Once Upon a Time, all new next Sunday at 8.
Did you already see that, Deborah?
Yeah, I didn't see that trailer, but I saw a UK trailer that shows the scene where Grumpy is with Snow White and they're with Gold, or Rumpelstiltskin, and Gold's giving Snow White the weapon to kill the queen in the plan. And Grumpy's like, "I'm not having any of this."
Oh, I didn't see that. But Snow White is wearing a costume that is very similar to what she's wearing in the animated movie. How cool is that? I mean,
that is cool.
Like the red thing in her hair and then the blue. I don't have vocabulary for dresses. But anyway, the animated movie dress, which is a perfect occasion for a plug of our other podcast series called Secrets of Disney, because we did a two-part episode, or I did with Deborah, we did a two-part episode about Snow White and about all the details. So in preparation for this Sunday's episode, you might want to go there and listen to that. You can find that show at disney.sqpn.com, or just look in iTunes, look for Secrets of Disney. So, Snow White.
One of the, if you look at the list of who's going to be in this episode, one of the characters is Black Knight. So they are, and the rest are dwarves. So they're going to be chasing down Snow White and see how it goes. But then the episode after that looks like a complete standalone episode again. Kind of goes off of this story because... Do you want me to say it's Alice in Wonderland?
I know.
Oh, I've been waiting for that one.
Yeah. Mm. So we have in 2 weeks, we get two episodes, we get Alice in Wonderland, which I have no idea where that's going to like fall with all of this. How are they going to weave that in? That'll be really interesting.
Apparently, according to Inge in the chat room, the Black Knight is from Arthurian legends. He's the bad guy from the Arthur novels. So, that's interesting too. We're going to read about that and certainly discuss it next week.
Right. And then the week after that, it looks like we're back to Snow White story.
Cool. Well, and then we've got the Stable Boy story, which
The Stable Boy. And in the cast, it has young Snow White. It has a child.
And I keep thinking, Stable Boy, could that be August somehow? But,
not in the cast. It has a completely different person.
Oh, okay.
Good. I know, right?
Long live IMDb. No more speculation. Hey, there was one detail that I noticed for the first time, even though they've showed it time and again, and I was like, it suddenly clicked. The clock in Storybrooke is not on the, let's say, the courthouse or whatever, but it's the clock of the public library. And the public library is closed. All the windows are covered in newspapers. And it's like, how symbolic. No more stories, no more future. Time stands still. And so I was thinking perhaps the season will end with the reopening of the public library as a place where, stories create new future.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, why didn't I see that before?
I have a feeling we're going to be watching this whole... My mother, just Shelley and I's mom, just started watching this from the beginning. Our parents just watched the first and second episodes, and it was really fun to talk to them about it.
Oh, good.
Because they were like, what about this? What this? And I was trying really hard not to give anything away.
Yeah, that is really hard. And we got some more recent converts. I'm doing a show with Dave Kale, and he's my co-host for Secrets of the Hobbit, which is a weekly podcast about the Hobbit movies in production in New Zealand. And he started watching Once Upon a Time, and he's hooked. He watched two episodes. He's like, oh, now I got to listen to the podcast. And that's totally up his alley, because with, of course, The Hobbit, we're also talking mythology and all the symbolism in there as well. And if people want to listen to The Secrets of The Hobbit, just go to thehobbit.sqpn.com, and that's where you can listen to our speculations about those really cool movies. I think they're going to be really fantastic. So let me ask you, Lisa, the blog, where can people find you?
It's soundmindandspirit.com.
Soundmindandspirit.com. Deborah, where can people find you online?
My own podcast at ipilgrimpodcast.com.
ipilgrimpodcast.com. And of course, in the show notes, we'll include links to our Twitter feeds where you can follow us. And I've been posting a few more articles during the week, and I'm using Twitter a little bit more, let's say, in a more intense way to try to solicit some more feedback and some speculation. And actually, it starts to work. People are flocking to our website to tell us their ideas and first reactions on the stories. And we can use that, of course, in turn for our show. And again, if you want to leave some voice feedback, which we absolutely adore, because then we get to hear our listeners, which is, the podcast is always one direction. So it's awesome to hear your voice as well. You can just go to the main page, sqpn.com. Which, by the way, is also the place where you can find all our other podcasts. So sqpn.com, and just click on that tab, leave voice feedback, and then we can play that on the show. Just keep it relatively short, brief, and to the point. And if you have like two theories, just leave two pieces of voice feedback so we can play them. Instead of playing a long piece of voice feedback, we can just split it up a little bit and react to each individual voice feedback. But don't let that keep you from leaving any type of voice feedback. Even if it's just saying hi, we love that. And if you have time, go over to iTunes and leave us a review or just a rating 5 stars if you can. And that really helps other people find this show as well and join the fun of speculating about Once Upon a Time. Hope to see you soon for another episode of The Secrets of Once Upon a Time. Thanks for listening, and until then, God bless.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic new media.